Blog Talk Radio.
UR Tennis is an advocacy group for underrepresented tennis participants. UR Tennis is an advocacy group for underrepresented tennis participants. These participants would include players, parents, coaches, and the learners of all racial minorities, all social class minorities, all sexual minorities, all age-related minorities, and anyone who seems to have been forgotten. Our mission is to act as the voice for tennis. We are striving to bring forth programs, contests, issues, news, education, and philanthropy that will benefit all in tennis. We are seeking active participation from populations that believe they have an interest in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We want to expand our outreach royally, regionally, nationally, and worldly. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to continuously be talked about, and we will pursue this idea relentlessly.
And gentlemen, let's get ready to be inspired! Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Creasy! Ladies and gentlemen, time to get in the game.
And good morning. What a show we have today. This is American Tennis. This is Coach Chuck Creasy. And American Tennis, we are on a mission. We need everybody's help out there. Everybody's help. There's a lot of work to do. We want to get American Tennis back on top again. We each week talk to the coaches, the teaching pros, the parents, the players, everybody and anybody who has something to say about American tennis. Never more than this week, the quote we always use is, all that it takes for evil to prosper is for good men to do nothing. We want to take our hats off to Robert Oglesby. We're going to talk about Robert a little bit and 8,600 replies on his Facebook. 8,600 and counting in just 6 days against the mandate or the rule proposal that's come down. Tyranny, a despotic rule, an unjust and sometimes even cruel use of power of any sort. A non-concern for that which is sacred, a sacred heritage or tradition. A non-concern for opposing points of view and the position of others. A non-understanding that power is ultimately given by God and by others. And that one's use of this power is critically important to be just in what is right. A belief that short-term gain supersedes long-term traditions, basically strong-arm tactics, tyranny. We've got John Roddick with us today. John, are you on the line?
I'm here, Coach.
John, okay, man. I've got to go to a commercial. We're going to be right back. And, John, we got a lot to talk about today, and I'm going to read your letter starting out right away that you sent in, and it was a doggone good one. And we're going to talk about a lot of stuff about college tennis today and the state of tennis in the United States. We'll be right back, John.
All right, sounds good.
Alternative Lighting and Power is a renewable energy solutions-focused company with an emphasis in helping athletic facilities. We would like to upgrade your tennis complex to the 21st century. We offer a range of services that will upgrade your tennis complex. We can use our technology to make your facility virtually disappear from the energy grid. We can provide lights, scoreboards, scoring systems, cooling systems, heating systems, camera systems, covered seating areas, wastewater management, and even new buildings. Our company is located in Houston, Texas, but we provide services to all 50 states and internationally. We would love to visit with you about our opportunities. Please contact Ed Love at 832-549-4193 or email at elove@alternativel-p.com. You can also visit our website at www.alternativel-p.com. We are the sunny side of business.
And we're back with American Tennis, John Roddick. I've got to say a few things about you here before we get started into the show here. But thanks for coming on, man. I really appreciate it. I think you started practice already. Or can you start practice yet? I think you're just training probably, right?
Yeah, we just have the, you know, we're in the eight-hour segment of the fall for a few weeks here before we get going. So,
you know,
not the best situation with that.
Segment. You know, John, yeah. We used to, a thing I read a long, long time ago was that Thomas Edison never had a clock nor a watch in his laboratory because the creative work that you do should always be done with the power generated from the momentum of that which you were doing. And, of course, he was known for his cat naps and all that stuff, but I can remember, John, in the early days, I used to be able to coach players, and if their backhand wasn't right or they weren't doing something well, we stayed there until we got it right. And it must drive it, I know how it drove me crazy when I was coaching these rules, you know, the eight-hour
yeah.
rules. And, you know, they just sort of – they would never tell a science student that, look, don't go work on your science projects any more than 8 hours. We wouldn't dare want you to get ahead of somebody. You know, our music student to do the same thing, so it's a little bit crazy. But, John, listen, let me just say this before we start. You know, I'm going to read your bio here real quick, but let me just say about John Roddick. I had to get in and look up his bio on the University of Oklahoma website, but basically I asked him to come on the show because he is, number one, he's a man of substance. He's a man who is respected all over the country and all over the world as being a man of honor and of substance. And if he said something, you pretty much can take it to the bank. His name's mentioned all the time as somebody we would like to have at a higher level in college tennis and tennis around the United States. He's the kind of man that we need in charge. He's not a person who's been at the desk. He's a person who's been in the field. His name is mentioned as hardworking, fair. Most recently, we all know that Andy's his brother, and he traveled around with Andy, and you know, has helped him all these years. But the biggest thing that is amazing was that John went up to University of Oklahoma, and Oklahoma has a fantastic athletic program. We all know that. But as far as tennis was concerned, it was always a program maybe snapping at the top and never quite getting there. But John's first year coaching, he somehow miraculously, I know how you did this, John, but you finished in the final eight, your first year coaching. This last year, your third year, you were Big 12 champions. People said pretty much now you're the power out there that has to be reckoned with. You know, it's a lot to be said for your hard work, John, and for your vision. John, you were also a four-time All-American at Georgia. I don't think we ever got a win over you. Did you ever lose to Clemson? I don't think so.
I don't remember losing to the Tigers.
I don't think so. I think Mitch Springlemeyer had a tight match with you one time, but you never did. And John, you got as high as number 6 in the world on the ITF. So, and everybody knows you out there. So I'm not going to go on and on, John. But you know, I had prepped you when we came on, and I just said, man, what's going on? Can you talk a little bit about the firestorm this last week with NCAA proposals, and what the heck is going on, John?
Right. Well, basically, you kind of alluded to the fact that I've been trying to, been nominated to be, put in a little bit higher places in college tennis and be part of the decision making. And this year, I accepted a post on the board of directors for the ITA, which also puts me on the men's operating committee, which really, is key because we start dictating a lot of the rules and the, and how we play the game. And so I feel like, having, some of the higher level coaches to make sure that it's geared towards that real competitive aspect of tennis, which is what we all play the game for. And so being on that board, the NCAA had a meeting in, I believe it was July, maybe it was June. I can't remember, but I didn't even hear anything about it and nobody did. And it was really kept very, very, very secret, just the way it was. And, basically they're trying to eliminate the third set at the championships, the NCAA. So the big part of the year, the important part of the year for all of us, eliminate third sets and play a super tiebreaker, and then shorten the doubles from 8 games, play an 8-game pro set, which, Coach, playing a dual mat, that's a short set to begin with. And trying to, shorten that down to play to just basically play one set, the tiebreaker at 6-all. And so, along with some other changes to speed things up, which I'm okay with anyway to cut out. If we can cut out 10 or 15 minutes here or there and not have it affect the matches, I'm willing to try that kind of stuff. And, if we like it, we like it. If we don't, we can always change it back. And the ATP's done that with a no changeover after the first game. And, it's just those kind of things. I don't really think they're gimmicks, but it's just a way of condensing matches a little bit, which I think is always a good thing as long as you're not affecting, the points and the way we score and all those kind of things. I know you were a long time ago a big proponent of the, non-warm-up because we stand out there for, 40 minutes, 45 minutes, maybe an hour and warm up. So we should be warm. Those kind of things, eliminating the warm-up with your opponent, shortening changeovers, things like that. We call it the low-hanging fruit that we can pluck off to shorten a little bit. But then they go and touch the way we actually play the game and the first set. I always talk, when I talk to people about it, I'm like, as a coach or as a player, you always knew those guys that just, you say they know how to win. They may not be the best player. They don't have the best forehand. They don't have the best backhand. They don't have the best serve, et cetera. But they know how to win. I mean, take Paul Goldstein was a great example. He did everything very well. Probably wasn't the best inning except for maybe moving, but the guy just won and won and won and won. And when I played, he was the hardest guy to play and he was the hardest out you were ever going to get. And, by eliminating the third set with a guy like that, I mean, you're really taking the heart and soul out of the game, and those players, tennis is always a mental battle. And by eliminating the third set, you eliminate the biggest mental battle of all. I mean, a lot of guys can concentrate for 10 minutes to play a super tiebreaker. It's not, it's really not that hard. And at that stage, a lot of guys are just thinking, let's just win a set and play a tiebreaker. And, we may as well flip a coin. And so that's basically what they're trying to do. And not to mention the fact, and I don't think this is a small deal either, is taking the final site from 16 teams, which is more of an Omaha type of, in College World Series at 8, we had 16, and taking that down to a final 4. And, I always think it's great when you have the 16 teams there, you have the friends and families, the support staff of all these teams, and you just have tons and tons of people that are somehow or other connected to some of the other teams, at this final site. Not to mention if you're playing at Georgia or at Stanford or one of the other venues that does also attract other fans, you have the general fans as well. And I think by eliminating that, I don't think they realize they're cutting off their legs as far as attendance goes, because a lot of people travel out there to that. And all of a sudden when you have 4 teams, I don't know where they expect all these other people to come from. I think they're eliminating probably 60% of their fan base right there, just because there's not going to be that many teams to get there. We've had good teams here at OU the past few years, and I understand how hard it is. When we got to the quarterfinals, we had to have a little luck with us, and then, just trying to get back to the round of 16 can be difficult and challenging. you know, not to mention trying to get to the Final Four. So, you know, no team in the country really going in every year, unless you, you know, maybe the Virginias of the last couple of years and USC's, but that's, you know, you have those runs and then those are going to go. No team in the country can plan on getting to the Final Four, you know, guaranteed every year. That's a very difficult task. So, you know, all of a sudden people don't know if they're going to go and you can't make travel reservations. And, you know, I just don't think they thought this through very well from a logistical standpoint. I mean, they're talking about all logistics of running the tournament, but, you know, as far as getting there and getting people there, and I mean, that's their whole deal. And I think they just literally, you know, cut the legs off of all the steam we've had. I mean, it's not like the final site has had a lack of spectators the last few years. I mean, there've been, you know, 4,000 and 5,000 people at these sites, which is, you know, I think a great step in the right direction. And you've seen it at Georgia for, you know, going on 30 years. It's always, they're always getting 4,000 to 6,000 people. I mean, just, it's automatic. Now that you change this, I mean, I venture to say we're going to be lucky if we get 2,000.
John, it's well said. Let me read a letter of yours that you just sent out 2 days ago. It's going viral as well on this Facebook. But let me just read it real quick. You're saying to the committee, I agree that we need to be very careful about what we're giving up. We are up in arms about the third set, and that is absolutely the priority number one thing to save. The NCAA committee is literally attempting to change how the sport of tennis is played. I do not think that this is their job. We have a hard time, enough time convincing quality players that college tennis is worth their time, and a decision like this will successfully end the debate, and they will not come to college. We've had so many strides in the recent years proving that college tennis is a great place to continue developing and gain the value of earning a degree at the same time. I worry that even the proposal of doing this has done serious harm to the reputation of college tennis. Tennis is tennis. It takes a long time to play sometimes. I've been to plenty of Davis Cup matches, you say, and Grand Slam matches that last over 5 hours. And there are always more people there at the end. It is always exciting. Tennis fans do come for good tennis. If we allow this to pass, we will do much more difficult time finding people at the college level. I hate the term that... I hate to say this way, but sometimes what we're doing sounds like a joke. And then you go on to say, I'm very concerned about the Final Four side as well. This is what you said. I think you explained that very, very well, right, John. And you know, all we need to do is say that, for example, at Georgia this year in the finals, I think UCLA women was playing, Southern Cal's women, and it wasn't full. There weren't probably 1,000 people there. And that's for an NCAA final. So really there has to be a different agenda. And, John, that leads me, I want to just make sure that you didn't have anything else here. You put it, it's interesting, to say the least, NCAA believes that championships are too crowded with too many competitors and too hard logistically to run. They did this themselves by combining the men and the women together. And, John, I got to bring out, 49-2 or 51-2 against the men voted 51-2 against bringing the women and the men together because they knew that this was the agenda to get it down to four teams. So now in order to keep it smaller, we're going to steal the experience of some of those magical countless number of players since the 1970s have had and reduce it to four teams. And you go on to say, you know, what you've already described. Now, John, we want to talk about a much bigger thing today, and, you know, I entered with some of the definitions of tyranny. One of my favorite quotes is I got bogged down in the bureaucracy of college athletics. The bureaucracies can't help themselves, really, John. They become too big. The NCAA, the USTA, the ITA, all these organizations end up becoming too big, and they end up becoming top-down management. And I have always said that once you put these computers and everybody got so organized with everything, I've said, you're going to allow Barney to run Mayberry. And, you know, and you basically, John, and we've been very explicit about not criticizing individuals. here,
right.
But we sure can criticize dumb and crummy moves here. And so go ahead.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, you know, the committee as a whole, and, I've been trying to get a grasp on who voted for what and all that. And I know some of the people well. I mean, some of the committee members I've known, basically my whole tennis playing life, the ones that did play. And, I think when you get in a room, and you've been in the ITA rooms where, you're talking about rules changes and things sound pretty good when you're discussing them and talking about them. It seems like it might be a good idea. It might not. But when but these things get thrown at you so quickly, and I'm speaking for the members of the committee, where because I've been in similar situations where things get thrown at you so quickly, and there's some very good salespeople in there that are pushing that agenda, and you just don't really have the time to think about it and do your due diligence. I mean, I was asked by one committee member at NCAA's about that, and I said it's a terrible idea. Why would we change the way we play singles? It's singles is 2 out of 3. And then their argument to me is, well, they do it at Kalamazoo or some of the nationals. I'm like, they do it in the consolation, which, number one, I'm not a fan of. Number two, those kids can be playing 2 matches and then a doubles match. So, they can be playing quite a bit of tennis. I mean, I've played in that backdrill myself and, ended up playing 9 sets of tennis in one day. But, I always look at those as a badge of honor those days. If you win all 3 of those matches and you escape there and fight the next day and you show up and you're not sore, and you can play the next day and play well, I think, that says a lot about your tennis, and that's part of what it's about. And to make the college kids play two sets and then a tiebreaker, when, we've literally been playing 2 out of 3 sets from the time we were 7 or 8 years old. I just don't understand, I don't see they talk about student-athlete welfare and these sorts of things, but, when the fact of the matter is, when they expand the tournament and do that third weekend, all of a sudden, you're going to be playing the round of 16 in the quarterfinals, most likely on the same week you're having to take finals. You tell me how you're supposed to prepare and do the, and the level of tennis you're dealing with, coming into the round of 16 in the quarterfinal weekend. And so it's basically just a ploy to shorten matches to try to get it on TV and this and that. But, people want to see 2 out of 3 sets. I mean, the best part of tennis is the third set. And I think you completely take the heart of the game away if you do that. And, you get in these little tiny boardrooms and, someone that you can get talked into believing anything for 5 minutes. But when you start really thinking about it, I think the NCAA committee's gotten the message on that as far as, the giant backlash. I mean, Evan King and Bob Van Overbeek of Florida have done an unbelievable job with the website on Facebook and then the petition. And, there's all of a sudden within 2 weeks, there's close to 9,000 members on the Facebook site. And, so that's great to see everyone united, and it's virtually unanimously. I mean, you have a couple Yardbirds out there that'll, pitch anything because they like to hear themselves talk, but it's literally, probably 99.8% against the rules. So, I don't see how they can possibly really go against that without – I don't see how they can do it. I mean, I know, if they do it, the thing is it's only for the NCAA championships, and, for our regular season matches, and I'll push to the – I'll refuse to play that way. If you come to play tomorrow, we're going to play that 3 sets. So,
but John, I want you to I want you to make a point here. I got a caller coming on here in a second, but I want to make a point. John, our scoring system as it was a compromise to start with. It was the Scarpa scoring system. I don't know if you remember. Were you a consistent Georgia maybe back then? But we had these meetings for over and ever. It's got to be shorter. And we basically, Paul Scarpa stood up one day and said, hey, let me tell you. And everybody turned around like E.F. Hutton, and everybody listened to what he said, and everybody applauded him. They put in the format we have now. Now, nobody likes pro sets. I always argued, you should play 2 sets starting at 2-all if you had to, or something, 3.
Right.
Now, everybody who coached and everybody that played that liked to play 2 out of 3 sets, is the way that we did it. Everybody liked to do that. The players got better. The players were trained to do that. It wasn't about getting too tired and things. Scarpa came up with this, and I wanted to remind everybody that that was a compromise from our old system that everybody liked. Then this now is a compromise that is being pushed through. And, again, the stealth.
I wouldn't really call that a compromise. I call it getting forced.
Exactly. And so, again, I always go back whenever I see some of the people who were on the board back then, I will say, hey, so-and-so, 51-2. The men voted against the women being together with the men. And the reason why was that their agenda from the start was to make four teams and four teams at Athens or somewhere. They wanted a Final Four concept. This was the agenda as of 6 or 7 years ago. Let me see if I could take this caller who's on the line here. Caller, are you there? Hello, caller? Okay, I don't. Hello, caller, are you there? 770.
Coach, it's JP. I wasn't.
Yeah, hello.
I was just.
Hey.
I really wasn't.
Hey, how are you?
Great, how are you doing? Hey, John. I just got off the phone with Bayless. He said that they're going to play the third set, but that's all that he knows thus far.
Right. So they're going to table it pretty much, and then they'll sneak it through. And the one of the crummy things for you guys is that they always hold the meetings when everybody's worn out and tired. And John, correct me if I'm wrong. Now I don't want to be unfair to anybody. But they push these things through, and then they say, well, everybody's going to be fine. John,
right.
One of the things that I wanted to talk about a little bit as well.
Can I say one thing and then drop off, Coach Chrissy?
Sure, go ahead.
And it's going to be and I know you're probably going to get on me about this, but I might as well say it. I also talked to the guy that runs this network this morning, and he had Dick Gould on yesterday. And Dick never served on a committee, according to, I don't know if that's true or not. And, John, I love your coach. I think Manny Diaz is great, but I don't think Manny Diaz serves on committees either. But he's the kind of guy that needs to be. A lot of these guys that, and Coach Creasy, you probably didn't, I mean, I don't know if you did or didn't, I don't know. But it seems like the guys that are busy coaching a lot of times, the guys that are really the ones that probably ought to be making these kinds of decisions or at least being involved in them, they end up being too busy to do some of this committee work sometimes, and they need to kind of probably make some extra time to do that. And that's all I'm going to say. I just think that, you know, sometimes the wrong people get in positions to make decisions, and it's sometimes over their expertise maybe. And I'll leave that alone. I'll let y'all. I'm just going to go on mute here, and I'm just going to listen through the phone.
The big thing is the statement is that there's nothing more pathetic when you get a small character in a big position or a small person in a big position. And most
Coach,
people.
I can comment on JP's thing about, you know, as far as serving on the committees. And, you know, I know Coach Diaz has in the past served on the operating committee, and I'm not sure about the board of directors and stuff for the ITA, and I'm not sure about the NCAA. And as far as Coach Gould goes, I really don't know at all. So, and I can speak to the fact when I first took the job here, I wanted nothing to do with the committees and all that. And, you know, I had a big project here just start building. But as I got into it in my third year last year, I started to see, you know, a lot of the problems. I just decided it's something if I have to, you know, stay up all night working on stuff and doing things that I, you know, it's something that I need to be a part of and just voice my opinion. So when you see, you know, stuff that's getting proposed, you know, that's crazy, you know, you can just call it out as being crazy because, you know, not playing a third set's crazy. You know, I would have loved to be in that room when that decision is being made the first time. I mean, you know, it doesn't mean when a proposal comes out, you initially think you look at it, you evaluate, you talk to other people, and then you make a decision. But, you know, some of that I've tried to make time for recently, you know, just to make sure that I feel like good decisions are being made in the best interest of tennis first, and then, you know, also in the best interest of what the student-athletes coming to college need to prepare themselves, you know, for life, not just tennis, you know, after they're finished school. And most of the kids want to go play, some don't, but also just being competitive in tennis helps you, you know, long-term in life. So just make sure we're making those kind of decisions the right way. And it is like, you know, we do need to get the younger coaches involved on the committee. And it does take up time, but, you know, it's just something if we want to maintain the integrity of our sport, then, you know, I feel like it's something that we really need to be a part of.
Yeah, you know, it's like these phantom decisions. I emailed three people this week, and, you know, I'm trying to be the stir stick a little bit. I just want to talk to them. I don't have a dog in the hunt, but, you know, John, I really do. I gave my life to this sport, and anybody in it's getting very, very personal. And, you know, the point is I asked them, are you the Phantom Bandit? Are you one of the Phantom Bandits? The Phantom Bandits that go around and make policy and then don't bring it before anybody else. I mean, this is unbelievable what the guy, Bob, it's Van Oglesby, right? Van Oglesby?
Van Oglesby, yeah.
Yeah.
Bob Van Oglesby.
They've got over 9,000. Over 9,000 in 6 days. These are college tennis players, normal tennis players. Every coach and player pretty much hates these 10-point tiebreakers. I don't want to get off on 10-point tiebreakers, but I wrote an article, as you saw, it came out on tennisrecruiting.net last week, and I researched it, and I had plenty of info there, and I actually emailed some of the USTA people and said, please look at this. You guys need to understand that you – we are our own greatest saboteurs. We are self-sabotaging this through bastardizing the greatest sport in the history of the world. And every player believes this, every coach believes this, but where is this stuff coming from?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, going back to the junior part of playing, you know, shortening matches and things like that is I struggle to see the rationale between by shortening junior matches and letting them play a tiebreaker for the third or, you know, two all, whatever they end up playing. You know, because one of the things you learn when you're young by playing these long matches and playing in the summertime in the heat in the U.S., I mean, unless you're, you know, out on the West Coast in some of those beautiful areas where the weather is always great, you know, for the most part, you're going to be playing in some heat. And you learn really quickly after playing a couple of long three-setters and feeling terrible the next day or feeling terrible that night or cramping, that you better be in shape and you better drink water and you better be hydrated and do things right. And by taking this stuff away, it teaches us, it teaches that you can cut corners and you can, you know, you can do things the wrong way and still get by. And then all of a sudden, you know, you're supposed to go out and start playing ITF juniors and, you know, futures and ATP challengers. And there's no shortcuts to take. And all of a sudden you're not in shape. I mean, how many kids have we seen out there? You know, I see it all the time that the kids aren't in good enough shape. And you learn at a very young age by shortening everything that, you know, you don't realize that you have to be in good shape. You know, they're like, what's the point of being in good shape if you're only playing two sets and a tiebreaker or you're playing an eight-game pro set? And so, you know, you'd see kids at 14th Nationals down in San Antonio, and they're back there in the backdrop playing two out of three sets twice a day in 100-degree heat. And, yeah, I mean, it's not always fun, but, you know, that's not what this is about. It's a little bit of a war of attrition and teaching you how to do things right, because you're walking a very fine line there. If you don't do things right, you're physically going to be in a little bit of trouble. And, you know, at the same time, we, you know, as a player, we've all cramped. We know it's not the end of the world. You're going to get better. You're going to, you know, rehydrate, and, you know, you're not going to die from it. And so it's something that it teaches you to do the right things. And I don't understand, the more we shorten it, just, it doesn't teach you anything. And, you know, except to cut corners. And so then we wonder why we have less and less players coming through. I mean, in the 80s, when we had all those players coming through and we had, you know, virtually 30 players in the top 100, you know, and granted, the world got more competitive and that'd be harder. But, I mean, those kids have been playing two out of three their whole life, you know, from 10 and unders on up. And, you know, that was probably one of the toughest groups of players that we ever had, all those guys coming through in the 80s. So, you know, I just don't understand the teaching mechanism behind shortening this stuff, because, you know, tennis at the five sets is not easy.
John, I've got a short answer. The other day, somebody said, these sports science people have to validate their position. You know, and I always thought Doug Pilot was on here a couple of weeks ago, and he said, you know, tennis is not a science. It is an art form. It is an athletic event of the heart. And, you know, I think that the sports science people might have something to do with it. You know, they come out with these theories, and then they have to validate their theories that it's too long and it's going to make people cramp. And I want to be the first to say, and this is my opinion, but, you know, at Kalamazoo, those seven kids that went down the first day because of heat, maybe it didn't have a lot to do with the heat. It had something to do with their, you know, training methods or maybe their extracurricular activities. I've been on a college campus, and you have too. And, you know, that's one thing to be said, is that in reducing the number of people at Kalamazoo, maybe everybody who comes will go there to try to win. We've got another call on the line, area code 812. Caller, are you there?
Yeah, Coach, how you doing? It's Randy Blumenthal. How you doing?
Hey, Randy. How you doing? Yeah, we're good.
Great. Hey, John. How you doing? Good.
Good.
Great show. I've been listening, following, and talked to John last week when a lot of this stuff started, you know, spreading around and people were talking about it. And you know, I think you're right on. And we're working hard right now to kind of stomp this out at a conference level. And some of this stuff. It's unbelievable when you listen to these proposals or even up on a higher level how this even takes place. But, you know, one thing that I thought was interesting is when I talked to you last week, John, and you were talking about development as we you're talking about right now, and you talked about, you know, real simply, you lose close three-set matches, you win, you start learning at a period of time how to win close three-set matches, and then you finally learn how to win two-set matches. I mean, just simple little things like that, it seems like, you know, nobody's thinking about whatsoever how that's not going to help at all. And I know, Coach, you've got your, you know, scoring systems, and you've rated all the scoring systems, but you know those third-set tiebreakers are, you know, you would just pretty much, you know, in 4 years wouldn't be enough time to get anybody to get any sort of momentum to develop on any level. So, yeah, it's unbelievable to me that we came up with a proposal like this, let alone the, you know, the stuff everybody I've talked to about the Final Four site, you know, every men's coach I've talked to wants to, you know, make it just the men's, you know, Final 16. And, you know, I know it's not everybody out there, but there's definitely a lot of coaches. Like you said, when it was voted on 51-2, I mean, I'm still running into the same, you know, every time we talk about it, it's like, boy, we wish we would split it up and it would just be men's at the end and, you know, round of 16 on. So,
right.
Yeah, I don't know, you know, it's, you know, a lot of this stuff is, you know, but, you know, as we move forward, I know that, you know, it's very important to talk about it. And I've been inspired by talking to a lot of the coaches on trying to get on committees myself at this point because, you know, I felt like a lot of times to get into those committees and your head starts spinning and you're like, well, I've got to work on things that are going to be more important than this, but, you know, obviously not. I think we all have to kind of get together and start to unify and come up with things that are going to better tennis and make college tennis, you know, one of the best amateur circuit in the world, like it should be.
Like it is, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Neither one of you guys, or let me just point this out, neither one of you coaches have said once, wow, what might get us on TV?
Right. Yeah, I don't think that's the issue. I think what I know will get us on TV is quality tennis. And, you know, in the nature of college tennis with six courts, it makes it very difficult to televise from the get-go. And so, you know, TV for me is not that important. You know, I don't think that that's a high priority, and I don't know why, you know, why TV is that high priority, that high of a priority for some people, you know, whether it's coaches or some of the administrators associated with the committee and things like that. And, you know, we all love when ESPN carried it, you know, but I think, you know, there's a channel out there called the Tennis Channel, and all they do is tennis, and I'm sure that we can, you know, eventually work something out with them where they're televising either all of the NCAAs or, you know, from the semifinals on or something like that. Because, you know, those of us that have been to the final site, and, you know, I've been to the final site when I'm not in college tennis, just because it's such a great experience. So, you know, people love watching and people love going. And, you know, the first time anyone goes there that hasn't been there, they always walk away from that saying, wow. And so we have a great thing. And you know, the nature of it with six courts is hard to put on television. You know, it's not like a volleyball game where there's one court and one game going on. So, you know, that part, I don't think shortening it is the answer to putting it on TV. I think there's other ways for us to be involved with television, whether it's through highlight shows, whether it's through the Tennis Channel. You know, all these, I know at Oklahoma, we have an unbelievable journalism and television program here. And, you know, we have the resources here, and it's a matter of, you know, getting those students involved and getting those professors involved and understanding this is a challenge to put on TV. And, you know, using those resources and getting on TV that way. And with schools going towards their own networks and things like that, you know, we're starting to have webcams on TV on all the courts, and, you know, it's starting to get easier and easier to put on TV. So I don't understand the hurry right now, you know, to change everything.
Smoke screen, guys. Come on, smoke screen. That's a window dressing. They think that's a bone for you coaches, and you guys are real coaches. You could care less about that. That's not your first priority. Guys, I got to go to a commercial here real quick. I hope you both will stay on the line a little bit. We got about 15 more minutes here. But I wanted to mention that if you want to send in and have your email on the show, it's, my email is chuck@coachcreasy.com, K-R-I-E-S-E. My website's www.chuckcreasy.net. I want to remind you that you can tell your friends you can get this on a podcast on the iTunes thing, or you can go to blogtalkradio.com. Let's go to commercial. We'll be back here in a second.
There we go.
This is Jason Haynes, the UR Tennis Network's Chief Executive Officer. Over the last 14 months, we have undergone a lot of changes here at the UR Tennis Network, and the Nike Tennis Camps have been one of our strongest supporters. They have had a very successful 2012 summer camp season and now are planning for 2013. We would like to thank them for allowing us to be an advertising avenue for their tennis camps. As we leave the summer, we want to encourage you to check out www.ussportcamps.com and start planning your next Nike camp experience. They have locations all over the U.S. for both adults and juniors. The Nike camps are offered in other sports such as golf, volleyball, soccer, swimming, softball, running, water polo, lacrosse, and field hockey. We want to encourage you to consider the Nike camp experience for your tennis needs. These camps are run by successful tennis coaches and offer a fun camp involvement where you learn new skills and make new friends. Be sure to check them out at www.ussportcamps.com or call them at 1-800-NIKE-CAMP and take your game to the next level.
And we're right back here with American Tennis. We have on the line Coach John Roddick, the University of Oklahoma, and Randy Blumendahl. We do have another caller here. We'll get hooked up here with 404 here in a second. But I wanted to ask for solutions, guys. I mean, we don't want to be just complainers and be complaining about stuff. What do we need to do, guys? I mean, quick solution here, John.
Well, I don't know that there's quick solutions. I mean, the first solution is getting the third set, you know, taken, you know, where that's on the table all the time, where we don't even look at that. I mean, that should be, you know, sacred, where we're not looking at it. And it's, you know, the other solution is, you know, I was talking with Christina Morales, who's our women's assistant coach. She won a national title when she played at Texas in the 90s. And so I was asking her about the women's event back when it was separated, if it can stand on its own and all that, because I've never really seen the women's event on its own. And so, you know, part of that is you know, you're asking for something where with half that story you're a little bit ignorant on. And, you know, and she said, no, it was a good event, and, you know, the crowds were there. She said with the men's combined, some bigger crowds, but she's like, there's also 16 more teams there, so there's automatically going to be more people. And, you know, so she's a proponent. And the good news is she's actually going on the NCAA championships committee. She's rotating on this year, so we'll have a very good voice with her on it as well. And she's a coach's coach and a player's coach, and so she understands, you know, a lot of the issues we're dealing with, and it's a great step in the right direction. So, you know, I think part of the solution is getting the right people in the right places to make decisions, because if you get the right people, you know, really, if you had the right people in the right place this time, there'd be no decisions to make. You know, we wouldn't be talking about all this, and, you know, we would have just, you know, we would have figured out the best thing for the championships and all that. And I think, you know, one thing that I'm not, you know, I played at Georgia and I coached there, so I'm very biased towards the event being in Athens. I know what a wonderful event it is, and not a lot of people are going to argue with that, as, you know, other than coaches that are in the hunt for the national title and end up getting knocked out by Georgia and the home crowd. You know, the other solution, which is a very long-term solution, is trying to find a site like Omaha that can handle it, you know, Omaha for baseball, that can handle the championship, and that's what that place is built for, where you have the indoor courts and then you have the outdoor courts. and you have something that can handle 32 teams or, you know, whatever they decide it's going to be, but can handle a very large event. And I think if you build it around a community and promote it, and, you know, that's the whole key is promotion. You know, people want to, you know, say by shortening the format, you're not all of a sudden going to have 5,000 people come out for a match. It's like, oh, they shortened the format. Oh. Yay. Let's go to the tennis match. You know, it's never worked that way. The biggest crowds in the history of college tennis were when Coach McGill was at Georgia and he was out there promoting it. And, you know, getting the fraternities and the sororities and the clubs and you know, in Atlanta, getting everyone that's involved in tennis interested in college tennis. And they were getting 6,500 people out for matches. And that's when you were playing 2 out of 3 sets for doubles as well. So those matches were easily going 5 and 6 hours, you know, on a regular basis. So the time is not the issue. You know, if you want to relate it to TV or something, the time may be the issue. But, I mean, that's not a priority at all. And so, you know, the whole argument that they have is flawed from the beginning. But getting the right people in place, and then, you know, if we are going to have it and there are some logistical issues, getting the facility, you know, that you can have the NCAAs at every single year. And it's like Kalamazoo with the junior. I mean, look what a great event that is for the junior boys, the 16s and 18s. You know, they're playing in front of thousands of people every day. And that event, that community rallies around that tournament every year, and the amount of sponsorship dollars they raise and all that. But it's through promotion, you know. And so if you have an event that one person is basically in charge of, and that's their job or a community, and, you know, all of a sudden that's going to take off and grow and grow and grow. But that's definitely not a short-term solution, because that's going to take a long time to build up to. You know, I think that's definitely a long-term solution, but I think it's one that we definitely need to start looking at.
Can I call you John Galt? Because I'm going to ask you, is there a shot at getting the men to break off of the ITA and maybe you head them up? Now, this is radical, but it could be part of the ITA. How about the MITA, the Men's Intercollegiate Tennis Association? And everybody who is out there, some of the women coaches might be cringing, but it would be a strength for everybody. Then you'd have the WITA. Then you all could come together. But, you know, we have John Roddick at the head of the helm here. And, you know, maybe you could head this up and then fight for the issues. That's what we're hearing over and over. Where in the world did this come from? It came out of left field. You know,
I think there's something to, I mean, with the ITA, there's so many, you know, that encompasses all levels of collegiate tennis, you know, from Division I, and we all know within Division I, there's all kinds of different levels. Just alone within Division I, then you throw Division II, III, NAIA, and all that. And you know, what we need is, as far as top programs, and Randy, you're in the same position, you know, where our resources are there. And I was just talking to my athletic director, Joe Castiglione, yesterday, is to not, you know, you need to get, you know, a system set up where you're not trying to punish schools that have resources, you know, and really let those schools with resources do what they can do for the players and do what they can do, you know, for their community, and really let them run instead of trying to make it a fair thing. Because, you know, the fact of the matter is, if I'm at, you know, a small, you know, barely Division I school, or you're at Oklahoma, you know, or Texas or Florida, any of those big schools with a lot of money, it's a different animal to begin with. And we don't want to try to punish these schools because they have these resources. Yeah. And, you know, we need to try to make sure that upper level of D1 tennis is being, the decisions that are being made for that level are proper for that level. You know, there's no reason, it's just not the same.
John, I'm going to go to Randy here, but Randy, I've got a caller. I've got to take, but I want a full 5 or 6 minutes for your idea. I think you've got the solution. There was reason why I brought you onto the show today, Coach Blumenthal. But I'm going to go to this caller here and see if they've got anything to add here. Caller from 404, are you there? Caller, area code 404-966, are you there? Hello? Okay, let's get back to Coach Blumenthal. Coach Blumenthal, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay, Coach Blumenthal, what John is talking about, and I was in there for 33 years, is that NCAA D1, D2, D3, NAIA, and junior college, men and women are 10 different divisions. They get them all in a room. They try to have the same thing for everybody, one size fits all. This is absurd. This is absurd. I mean, and, you know, and I'm trying to be a little bit, you know, facetious here with John Roddick, you know, getting him to step up here, and that we're so glad he's on these committees already. Randy, you have a great plan. Can you just, I'm going to give you 5 or 6 minutes to go into whatever you want to talk about, but the people have to hear about your plan.
Okay. Yeah. Well, first of all, I thought those, the ideas John was talking about, I'm 100% on board with those. That building in Omaha is, I mean, that's a great idea, and I've actually thought and talked about the same thing. And, you know, it seems like I, you know, around the ITA anyway, it seems like I get dirty looks every time I talk about that. But I think that's a great idea, and I really do think if it was built properly, that that really could be a solution. Tennis on TV, you know, that's interesting. You know, so you're kind of throwing the carrot out there where ratings, and we're going to produce revenue. And the history of tennis being on TV on major networks, you're talking about marquee events like Grand Slams or high profile players. So you're either going to have to build an event, or the players are going to have to be there that want to, you know, people want to follow. And our format would be cumbersome for that, to say the least. So my idea was to shorten the dual match season to 10 weeks in the fall, kind of piggyback off football games, and but have it all finished in 10 weeks. I think the long dual match season starts to wear a lot of these players out mentally. I don't think they have, you know, as much to, you know, to where they can develop it at a faster rate, you know, like if they play tournaments. So the 10 weeks, I do think there's a lot of good things that come out of dual matches. And the 10 weeks, I think, would be the right amount of time. And then in the spring, build like a Grand Slam type circuit to where the kids would be inspired to go out and play in the, you know, all summer long, and be ready to play again for dual matches in the fall. You know, do a indoor slam type thing, ITA, whoever would sponsor it, do a clay court, do a hard court thing. And, you know, there's definitely people have poked holes at that, but I feel like that would be the best circuit for players to really develop, and, you know, to get players the best chance to go out and play at the next level. And, you know, so anyway, that's the idea.
The best thing about that is that smaller teams that do not have budgets could have a 10-week season. Then they're done for the year, and they're okay. And NCAA would like to have a short season. And then those who are serious players, you have a circuit that's open to everybody, and those small colleges could go play in some of those circuit events, and they could play open tournaments. And you would once again have college as a vehicle for training. You know, is it so?
Correct.
It makes a lot of sense to me because of the football that you have at every school. You can piggyback football weekends, and
the weather patterns would be better. You know, we probably 90% of the country is going through bad weather for, you know, 2 months plus, and you know, in our season currently. And you know, if we played in the fall for 10 weeks, I mean, we would have, the majority of the country would have good weather for the entire period of time that we'd be playing our season. And then we could build the events off of, you know, whatever the weather patterns are in the spring. So, you know, just all, you know, to me, all the way around, that would make more sense. I know there would be some obstacles, but, you know, as far as just developing, you know, tennis to be at its best in college, I think it would be a good, like you said, a good vehicle to help everything move forward at a better rate.
I love the idea of being able to piggyback off of football. I mean, I know just at our place, I'm sure a lot of, and at Georgia when I was there, one of the parking lots we use that you know, you have all the RVs in is literally right in front of our door. And, you know, being able to, when we have done, you know, alumni events, and it's just, it's so packed, and we have so many fans, and, you know, I hadn't thought about switching them, but, you know, why does it have to be a, you know, a team sport in the spring and individual? To answer
the question for the individuals in the spring, you know, when to have NCAAs. You have a team event and then an individual event, and I think it's a lot easier to do that way. Just, you know, really thinking about it, I would be, you know, definitely willing to look at something like that, because I don't – it what does it matter if you play in the fall or the spring? And you're right on the weather. I mean, we're in a place where the weather's pretty good most of the time, but we do have our issues, whereas in the fall the weather, you know, from, you know, September 1st till December 1st is really unbelievable weather. So, you know, yeah, it's something that we need to look at. If you know, again, the NCAA, then you're switching you deal with that whole bureaucracy of trying to switch your sport from a spring sport to a fall sport.
Yeah.
You know, but really, you know, in essence, we're a year-round sport anyway. So what's the difference,
right,
you know, other than a few pages in the manual?
And then the other thing is, Coach, the events that would be built would be meaningful. Right now in the fall, you know, I'm not trying to take away from them, but the kids don't go into them with the same intensity,
No. The
individual tournaments. So,
no. You got 60% competitors, and a bunch of those tournaments, they don't mean the same as they used to. And then you do grind down the players all spring. I saw the players that come back to train after college. They always just want a month off. Guys, I got a couple quick comments here. You know, we got to remember, you know, that, you know, it's a sad thing when wrong people make wrong decisions for wrong reasons. We've got to get you guys on some boards. We got to get the right people on some boards. I'm not saying they're not good people. That, you know, they are good people, but usually bureaucracies can't help themselves. They can't get out of their own way. I think I wanted to bring up this because the USTA today, I just got a call up to Flushing Meadow, is basically covering their tracks, but they basically have strong-armed the Little Mo tournaments to where they can't use yellow balls anymore. They're going to make them use green balls, and they're basically, this is the kind of tactics that really, really upsets everybody. We've got top-down management in most of these situations instead of empowerment of the younger people who are out there. Tomorrow there'll be a big show on J.P. Weber's We Coach Tennis. He has Steve Bellamy on from the Tennis Channel. We'd like to get everybody to listen to that. We also want to encourage you to go back and listen to Dick Gould, who was on yesterday. And they also had on Robert Van Oglesby, and they were talking about the same issue. As a fantastic show on the Diversity in American Tennis show on the UR Tennis Network. Guys, any other quick things? Listen tomorrow at 12 o'clock, J.P. Weber's We Coach Tennis. I wanted to give the website again. Is chuck@coachcreasy.com. Chuckcreasy.net is my website. Coaches, any quick things there? We got about a minute.
Well, you know, I just think, you know, I appreciate being on the show, and I think that, you know, the nice thing over the last 2 weeks or so has been to see everyone in the tennis world, especially every, you know, just about every guy that's played college tennis recently, and, you know, man and woman, you know, really band together and, you know, decide that something is crazy and to really, you know, stick together and fight for something. And, you know, the nice thing to see is hopefully, you know, from what we've heard today, that it is making a difference. And we, you know, you just have to keep doing that when you see things that you don't like, and basically everyone's in agreement with it, and you just have to keep fighting. And we have made a difference this week, I think, and hopefully we can keep doing that in the future.
Yeah, John Galt, thank you very, very much for being on. Coach Randy Blumendahl, we want you to keep promoting that idea over and over and over. Pretty soon people will wake up like they did with Coach Scarpa, the Scarpa scoring system, and they'll scratch their head after one of those long, long meetings and say, hey, you know what, guys, that sort of makes sense. You know, so thank you very much, Coach Randy.
Randy? Just thank you for having me on, Coach. Always a pleasure, and I you know, stay the course with the show. I think it's a great thing, and John, you know, is definitely inspired me by a lot of things he said in the last week and a half, and hope we gain momentum with this, and you know, we start moving tennis in the right direction. But I know you're doing that on the show, and I appreciate it.
We're trying. All that it takes for evil to prosper is for good men to do nothing. You're always in the process of winning or losing. It has very little to do with a win or a loss. God bless you guys. Thank you. God bless American tennis, and we'll see you next week.
All right. Thanks, Coach.
Opinions stated by various contributors to UR10's radio and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR10's network. Visitors are urged to use their own discernment to draw their own conclusions. All information, products, services, and use of this website is for personal use only. UR10's radio does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of the information contained within the website. Any services or products provided by UR10's radio and its hosts or contributors should be used solely for entertainment and enjoyment. We emphasize the importance of keeping an open mind and not construing the data, products, and/or services as factual.